ABC Radio Australia. There have been 250 reported cases of COVID-19 in the Pacific. The first one was detected in French Polynesia more than a month ago. And while there's been 7 deaths, authorities across the region are reporting that most patients have recovered. The total number of confirmed cases has been relatively stable. So that's good news for now. But health authorities across the Pacific are continuing to prepare, supported by donor partners like Australia, New Zealand, the US, and China, stocking up on medical equipment and raising awareness in local communities. And even if the Pacific is able to escape the worst of the health crisis, the small island economies have already been decimated and it's set to get worse. So right now, all kinds of ideas are being put forward about how the Pacific might best deal with the new normal. Pacific Beat's Catherine Grau has been taking a look and she joins us now. Catherine, what are some of the dire predictions?
Well, Jordan, they're forecast that many Pacific economies are going to see negative growth this year, as much as down at negative 6%. And that is largely because they are expected to continue to have their borders closed to international travellers, so no tourists. So the places that rely most heavily on tourism, the Cook Islands, Fiji, Palau, Samoa and Vanuatu, likely to be worst hit. And of course, what this really means is the amount of money generated by the government or for the government revenue, but also tens of thousands of people who work in the tourism industry will lose their jobs if they haven't already. Now, most governments in the Pacific have already announced their own stimulus packages already to try and deal with the situation. And of course, there is likely to be more in the months ahead as this continues. But they are also signing deals for loans and grants from major lenders like the Asian Development Bank. But it's likely they will need much more. And of course, it really depends on how long borders remain closed. Already this week, we heard from Vanuatu's new Prime Minister, Bob Lohman, saying that their border will be closed for as long as there are still cases in the region. Now, there was a suggestion this week from an economist. He's also a current opposition MP in Fiji, Biman Prasad, that perhaps Australia and New Zealand could even bail out some of the small island nations. Let's take a listen.
The stimulus package for Pacific Island countries would be a very, very small percentage of what Australia and New Zealand are providing to their own economies. And that is something that can possibly be done. And of course, both Australia and New Zealand provide assistance through multilateral agencies themselves to Pacific countries. And so some rationalization there.
Well, that's the idea of Biman Prasad. He's an opposition MP in Fiji and also an economist. Now, that was one of the suggestions he put forward in an opinion piece that was published this week. He also came up with an idea of what he's calling a Pacific community or even a Pacific parliament that he proposes in the aftermath of the COVID crisis could help the Pacific essentially be united and can deliver certain services more effectively and efficiently if it's done together as a Pacific region. I guess a way of having larger economies of scale. Let's hear a bit about that idea.
Leaders of the Pacific meet once a year, but a Pacific Parliament could be a much more effective operational law suggesting or law making thinking forum, which can look at all these regional integration issues, laws, policies, which can obviously be adopted by Pacific leaders. I think there are models out there. You have the European Union model, for example. There are models on which we can look at a Pacific community which is engaged in delivering policies and goods and services for the well-being and welfare of all the people in the Pacific, including those in Australia and New Zealand.
So, Catherine, he suggests that Australia and New Zealand could be part of this Pacific Parliament, but there's already a similar regional body that they're a part of, and that's the Pacific Islands Forum.
That's right, Jordan. Now, I put that to Biman Prasad, and he doesn't see this idea of a Pacific Parliament as a double up because, in his mind, the Pacific Islands Forum is really more of a technical regional grouping rather than one that perhaps makes laws and shares resources, etc. Now, he believes as well that the smaller countries in particular would benefit from having stronger relationships with larger countries like Australia and New Zealand. He notes, of course, many others are critical of this. They worry about Australia and New Zealand taking advantage of small island nations or having just too much influence. But he was pretty clear in saying that he thought that Pacific countries would benefit most from a relationship with Australia and New Zealand and not China, obviously, which is a country of great interest in the region and further afield. Now, we do need to remember that Biman Prasad is an opposition MP. He is critical of the Fiji government's policies and things like its own relationship with China. So I've been speaking to a few regional experts to get their view on the suggestions he put forward this week. Some have described them to me as being skewed by his role as an opposition MP, also described as being outdated and out of touch. But certainly the people I spoke to, you know, said that there was no doubt that this is a critical juncture for the Pacific at the moment and things will need to change into the future. There have been ideas put forward similar to this in the past, and I'm told that everyone agrees there is a lot to gain from better cooperation, but that it is very hard to make it work. So for more on this, I was able to speak with the head of the Pacific Islands Forum Secretariat, it's Dame Meg Taylor, and get her views on what she thinks the road ahead for the Pacific might be like after coronavirus.
Dame Meg Taylor, thank you so much for making the time to speak with the ABC during obviously a difficult time. Now, you recently penned an opinion piece and you finished with the lines, "We're all in this together, we will and we must come out stronger." Just wanted to get an understanding, if you have a clear picture in your mind about what that could or would look like in the context of obviously the COVID crisis. I know you were referring also to climate change, but when the COVID crisis is finally over.
One thing I've learned from this issue is that they definitely will have to look at the investment that we make in our health infrastructure for all our countries. Yes, closing our countries off has been an important initiative by many of the Forum Island countries, but I think looking forward, particularly from a health perspective, is just how better prepared we can be in the future in terms of being able to manage viruses like this, which has really taken us all by surprise, and it's a huge impact, particularly on the economies of the countries. And then after this, and some of the work that we're looking at is just what is going to be the economic impact on the Pacific, which is small economies anyway.
And in terms of the economy, I'd like to come to that in a little bit more detail in a moment. But, I mean, obviously at the Secretariat, your role is to coordinate a lot of the response both right now and into the future. We've had the suggestion this week from an opposition MP in Fiji that perhaps after this it's an opportunity to pursue something like a Pacific Parliament where there's more integration politically, but also systems, including possibly health, as you point out, that could be done better in the future. Is that something that you see merit in?
Discussion about regional integration has been around for some time. The appetite for that has to come from the countries themselves in terms of relinquishing sovereignty. That's not a position that I'm advocating. I think that better cooperation with what we've got under the Pacific Island Forum, that's where we are, and that's what we've got to make work.
And so that's something that you would be advocating, exactly, that PIF already exists. It just needs to be perhaps better supported or better cooperation.
Well, we've tried to do this now with the Pacific Humanitarian Pathway to see the role that we can play is really, it's the political space to make sure that countries are comfortable in terms of opening up their airspace with regard to their protocols, with regard to quarantine, etc., so that medical help can get in there and also both in equipment and personnel. This is an initiative that all the countries of the region have signed up to. In the coming weeks, it's really making sure that that's implemented.
Yeah, and if we could talk a little bit more about this humanitarian pathway, because we've seen the first delivery of the face masks arrive in Fiji this week. I mean, are you also at PIF, the Secretariat, negotiating the actual items themselves? What else is still to come? How hard has it been to negotiate for these items to be allowed into the Pacific region? Obviously, that's the whole point of the pathway, is that it makes it easier, but was it a hard slog to get to that point?
No, WHO has the lead on this in the region, and the Regional Organisation for the Pacific, one of our agencies, crop agencies, the Pacific community that does a lot of the medical and science work, they are very much involved. What we received was a donation that came from the Ma Foundation, and we've taken receipt of that. There was clear indication by the foundation that they wanted this to go to countries that already had cases, COVID cases, So then the distribution of that, we will work with the countries that are supposed to receive this. But that's not my role, is to negotiate suppliers to come in, and that's already being done with particularly with SPC and WHO. And there is a lot of material or health supplies now in Nandi, and the issue will be getting them to the countries when the countries request it.
Now, you were mentioning before about obviously the recovery and the state of Pacific economies at the end of this, or even obviously during it. No one knows how long it will last. There are dire predictions for some or all Pacific economies. How can that be managed in your mind? Obviously, a lot of these countries have already unsustainable levels of debt, and it's going to be having long-term flow-on effects for the everyday people in terms of the health services provided, the education for their children. There's been some suggestions that Australia and New Zealand could bail out Pacific countries. What is your recommendation going to be?
Well, right now we're doing the work on this, and it's a pity this interview wasn't for next week, yes, because our economic teams will be coming into brief management next week on what our view is of what the future may look like. But we're not the only ones looking at this. I know that Australia's looking at this. I know that the World Bank and IMF are looking at this. I know that the Asian Development Bank is looking at this. So at some point, it will be a discussion with the economic ministers and finance ministers of the region as to what the next steps will be in terms of recovery. Many of the countries that have been able to get concessional finance from multilateral banks have done so, and looking at cutting costs within their own countries, and then looking at what will the future look like. And yes, you've raised a very important issue around the debt and how we're going to recover that. I'm not making suggestions that any country comes in and bails out the Pacific. The Pacific has to make that decision itself after a very thorough discussion with the economic ministers. And of course, each country will be looking at how they will manage their own economies.
And of course, all of this comes at a time when we were already having this geopolitical tussle between China and then the US and its allies like Australia, for example. There's already talk now that this global situation is going to change that balance of power, and we'll just see more dominance from China. Is that something that you are forecasting and preparing for in the context of the Pacific as well?
Maybe I should put it this way. My concern is this. Assistance that comes into the region, I would hope that it comes from a very strong humanitarian position. And, of course, our own member states like Australia and New Zealand, they go through this with us in terms of our climate impact issues, as well as now with COVID. But I think some of the intervention could be looked at. I mean, are the big powers saying, well, what's the region going to be like for me when all this is over? And what the Pacific as a collective have to think about is, what is this region going to look like for us when this is over and into the future? So the work that we'd already started with the member states is this 2050 strategy to look into the future. And right now, our teams are working in discussions with member states through webinar, looking at a series of scenarios of what the Pacific will be in 2050. This huge intervention of a virus like this is going to take us back in time, but will it also consolidate our position as a region, and that we pull together, knowing that circling us are big powers who want influence? And the Pacific is used to this, and they deal with it on a daily or weekly basis with different powers in the relationships, the discussions, etc. But I see a heightened interest now, and of course that is a concern, and the forum leaders will in due course have a discussion on this.
On the actual specific situation, we see figures in the Pacific still at this stage really quite small, just around 300 cases, and that's including even non-PIF members like Guam, for example. But there is also really limited testing that's happening despite donations that are coming through from Australia, New Zealand and China. Now, as the Secretary General of the Pacific Islands Forum Secretariat, and in discussions that you're having with forum leaders, are you hearing that there's fear amongst leaders about what the real situation might be and how the situation might unfold as they watch, and we all watch, you know, highly developed countries like the US and its health system not even able to cope?
There's been a shipment of testing kits coming in to the region very shortly, coming in from the United States, the first shipment and then a second shipment. That has been secured with the assistance of some of our own countries, and SBC's been working with them to do that, and then it'll be distributed to countries. Do I sense fear? I think I sense concern and anxiety to protect our peoples, the vulnerability of particularly of the smaller countries, the atoll states, that Tuvalu, Kiribati, Marshall Islands, but the sharing of information between each other. This is part of the Pacific Humanitarian Pathway. The foreign ministers, we've linked them all up. Technology worked. It shows that we're in touch with each other and those concerns that each country has that they can share. I think in terms of the future, just like many of us who live on countries, I do in Fiji, is that, well, what is the future going to be like in terms of the health security for everybody? These are areas that countries are working on now for the future. There is, of course, concern that in some of the smaller countries, that ships coming in, the quarantine issues are a huge issue to ensure that citizens of member states are all protected. And that would be the major concern that I hear from leaders.
And obviously, looking to the future, you've spoken many times and very recently as well voiced your concern that obviously this particular pandemic, while it is a threat and that leaders around the world are taking very seriously, there's a threat that's much bigger in many people's minds, and that's, of course, climate change as well. Where do you see that fitting in with this situation in terms of the way that when this is all over and countries start to rebuild, reopen their industries, we don't go back to the status quo, but actually perhaps change our view on climate change and the actions required?
I think the Pacific's position is consistent. Temperature rise, what we've always advocated for and our leaders have advocated for consistently, is that it is less than 1.5 degrees. And as it, as the invitation shows, that the temperatures are rising and rising, and in some sense, the virus has given a reprieve. But Cyclone Harold reminded us very robustly that don't forget the climate impact, climate-induced impacts that we receive in the Pacific, that is always there. I think that this is going to be the biggest, one of the big challenges that our countries have in terms of rebuilding ourselves from the health side of things. But all this has got to be interconnected in terms of the security of people, the health, the food security, the environmental security, the health security. These are long-term challenges, and short-term and long-term challenges that we're going to have to face and how we're going to have to address them. And it's going to be hard when we're going to suffer economically, and that's where we will want assistance. And we'll want assistance from all our development partners, all of them.
Just because you mentioned Cyclone Harold, that, you know, scenario that we've seen play out, the assistance that's been provided but delayed because of obviously concerns about, you know, particles of the virus being on the relief supplies and that being delayed. I mean, has the situation been handled? Obviously, everyone needs to take it very seriously and very carefully, but it's also shown us that people who are desperately needing help have had to wait.
That's right, but I understand that the quarantine issue has been handled very strictly because of the concerns, so that there is no further contamination through the relief supplies. And the country, our own member states, like Australia and New Zealand, have been very supportive of getting relief supplies into those countries that have needed it, and we are very grateful for that.
Dame Meg, thank you so much for speaking with Pacific Beat. We really appreciate your time.
You're welcome, Catherine.